Autumn arrives officially in the noon hour today. The time of the autumnal equinox, sun over the equator, is 12:20 p.m. You may not feel an immediate change, but the days will soon be shorter than the nights and cooler, and the plants growing outside will change. Early in the pandemic, when many people took up gardening for something to do, we reached out to Jackson County Master Gardeners and found Lynn Kunstman, who now joins us weekly through the growing season to field our many questions on successful gardening. Lynn, welcome back.
Thanks a lot.
Was out checking the tomatoes yesterday, and boy, they look a lot redder than the last time I checked a few days ago. The intervening period was a heavy rain, and I just wonder, is rain actually better for the plants than domestic water? I think we've talked about this before. There's no chlorine coming from the sky generally.
Well, yeah, right. So it's just pure H2O, although it's probably carrying, you know, when that initial rain happens, it's probably carrying a lot of particular nutrient
right.
from the smoke into the soil. But yeah, it's, you know, rainwater, I think, is always better for plants. It's not chlorinated. We're not dumping potable water out onto our gardens when it rains. And so, yeah, it's probably better for them.
So smoke, does it actually have some nutrients? Is the fact that there's ash in there, is that something that's potentially beneficial for soil?
Yeah.
I mean, humans hate it, I know, but...
Right, yeah, it's not good in your lungs.
Yeah.
But, when we have burns out in the wild and that ash from the burning vegetation lays on the soil, that acts as a nutrient. I mean, there's a lot of potassium. And, you know, anything that the plant's bodies are built out of, so potassium, calcium, phosphorus, all of those things are then released and are available right at the soil surface for regeneration. So, yeah, some of that stuff is volatilized, no doubt, when that particulate matter gets into the air. And while it's not good for us to get it into our lungs, it's certainly not going to hurt the plants that it's falling on and the soil that it's getting into.
Mm-hmm. That's good to know.
Yeah.
One benefit there.
Yeah, unless, you know, I mean, if it's a burning building, that's
right.
a different matter, because those are not, you know, that's not native vegetation. When a structure fire happens, that's a whole different ball of wax.
Yeah, that black smoke is insulation burning and plastics and all that stuff. Yeah,
nasty things that shouldn't be in the air. Yeah.
All right. So it got me thinking about you know, when you try to figure out what is working in your garden, like, okay, I watered it this much, or I did a little side dressing of fertilizer or something. I mean, can you drive yourself insane by trying to figure out what works?
Well, yeah, I could drive myself insane any day, but gardening is a practice, right? So it's a learning. You continue to learn your entire life, mm-hmm. what works and what doesn't in a garden. But yeah, I mean, you can get, it's good if you have a schedule of fertilization. If you're one of those people who's really precise and likes to follow a schedule, plants do like a little bit of a nutrient sip during their growing cycle, and that will help keep their vigor up. When I grow my vegetables, they don't get a lot of extra fertilization. After I plant them, you know, with fertilizer in the spring, I'm not going through and side dressing at, like some of the books tell you to do. And I get tremendous production from my garden. So it also depends on the soil that you have. If you're in a really sandy soil, mm-hmm. where the nutrients are going to leach away quickly, then you might need to be side dressing and watering more, you know, giving extra fertilizer, extra nutrient and water to your plants. So it really depends on the soil type, I think.
Well, conversely, with clay soil, would you need to water less often because it would retain water better?
You should. I mean, theoretically, yeah, the clay soil is going to hang on to the water like crazy. Mm-hmm. And it also holds on to nutrients much better because it has a finer particle size and there's, you know, an electrostatic kind of connection. And so it holds on, the little clay micelles hold on to the actual nutrients. And then they're available there in the soil interface to when water comes by for the roots to uptake. So, yeah, clay soils tend to be if they don't get too mucky, they tend to be easier to maintain moisture and nutrient in.
If you've got a little bit of each, you know, perhaps because, you know, somebody dumped some stuff on your property at some point, if you got a little sandy soil over here and a little clay soil over there, is there any sense in combining them?
Yeah, you have to be really careful with that. Sometimes when you mix sand and clay together, you basically make cement.
Ah.
And so that, you know, I've heard of people, oh, I've got really, you know, my clay soil is just too hard to work. I'm going to get a bunch of sand and mix it in, and then they create problems for themselves. Better in both instances, whether you either have sandy soil or clay soil, to add organic matter, which helps make humus, which is a kind of a crumb structure in your soil, and that works with any soil type, whether you have sand, silt, or clay. And most of us have a combination of those three things in our soil, but adding humus, adding compost, organic matter, helps make the soil into a structure that water can easily infiltrate and that microorganisms can live in and that, you know, little arthropods can move through. So you really increase the health of your soil and its water retention abilities and its nutrient retention abilities.
A fairly consistent, a fairly consistent consistency, I guess, throughout is what's called for, right?
Right, yeah.
Because otherwise you got clumps here and other stuff.
Right. And like I said, mixing sand and clay can be quite disastrous.
Okay, I will definitely avoid that. Yeah, I got some sandy soil that came from somebody else's property off in one corner and thought, oh, you know, maybe I could just get these together. So you've warned me away from disaster, potentially.
Just add compost to that.
All right. Lynn Kunstman with us once again on the Jefferson Exchange from Jackson County Master Gardeners, answering my questions and yours here on the program about gardening issues. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760, or send your emails to jx@jeffnet.org. You were talking about the regularity of fertilizer. Plants do like a nutrient sip, and I have been, well, I love the phrase anyway, weekly, you know, apply your fertilizer weekly by the week, but it ended up being more like weekly, bi-weekly, or tri-weekly. If it's irregular, does that cause any particular problems for the plants?
I don't think it causes a problem. Plants adjust, and the other thing is that the soil itself, if it's healthy, is going to act as a buffering agent. So it's going to hold on to the nutrients and release them over time to the plant. So, I don't think it matters if you miss a fertilizing or five.
You've been watching.
I do not side dress my plants necessarily during the growing season. I might give them a few drinks of like fish fertilizer or something like that. But it's random for me. And like I said, I get fantastic production. I can't keep up with everything that comes out of my garden. So I just think here in the Valley, we've got really, you know, a great growing season and the soil is fairly rich. If you're down in the Valley, you've got that clay soil that's going to be your friend for growing vegetables.
On Valley floor, the clay comes from the alluvial, from the stream, basically.
Right.
So the part about, well, September, October, I mean, August, September, these are the times when, as you mentioned, great production, you're getting stuff out all the time. You really can't turn your back on the garden. You got to go out there every day, don't you?
No kidding. Yeah. You'll be inundated. Yeah. Right. You gotta harvest every day and deal with that stuff.
But what should you be doing about watering at this point? I mean, is it the time to taper off because the nights are cooler and there is some moisture recapture at that point? Or
you can. We have turned the watering down by a factor of half because there's less transpiration going on in the lower temperatures. The cooler nights really help keep the soil in the plants and in the ground. So once again, you know, watch your plants. If they start looking like they're heat stressed, but at this time of year, that shouldn't be the case since we've got shorter days and cooler temperatures. And it really, things really are winding down.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So how you go out there every day and check for the fresh fruits and vegetables?
Well, yeah, my husband or I go out but of course the zucchini are still getting away from us. So you find a monster out there and it's like a cudgel. Just horrifying. It goes right in the compost pile. You know, it's just like, oh, okay, we can't. This is as tall as I am. And it's one way. Horrible. But yeah, we harvest every day. Yep. My counter is just piled with stuff, just peppers and eggplants and tomatoes and zucchini. And yeah, it's ridiculous.
There was something I was listening to on the radio as I got home last night. It was about wine, but the subject of terroir came up, and I think I've asked this before, but I'll go at it again. How different can a fruit or vegetable be from place to place? I mean, there's so many variables in soil and location and light and all that sort of thing. And I just, you know, would a tomato of the same breed as your next door neighbors potentially taste very different just because the conditions are very different in which they're grown.
Oh, I've never even thought of that. I can't even imagine. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's true. People say it's true with grapes. And I guess if you're one of those people who's a super taster, you can taste the difference between grapes that are grown in different soil types. But I don't know, with vegetables, I wouldn't expect them to taste that much different from area to area, but perhaps they do. I'm not a super taster, and, okay. And I don't know. It's not anything I've ever even thought about.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, wine's a different kind of thing. Wine's all about the taste because you're not sitting there crunching away on it.
Wine's a little, that's kind of a higher level deal.
Let's see. What am I ask about as we get closer to the ripe pumpkin season? I remember all the champion pumpkins I've had a chance to see over the years, and I always ask the people, "What did you do to get this thing so big?" So I just kept giving it manure.
Right.
Haven't asked yet about manure for things that you would eat. Are there places where you wouldn't want to use manure?
Well, any kind of, not that I know of. I mean, I don't, you probably don't want to be putting it on your leafy greens, at least not on the not on the vegetative part of your leafy greens. Cause some manures are sprayable. You know, you're putting them out in a liquid form onto the plants themselves, and they can take up some of those nutrients through the tissues of the plants. So you wouldn't want to be putting those things on your leafy green vegetables, but you could side dress with them. Mm-hmm. You could put them at the base of those vegetables for the vegetables to take up. It's problematic. I mean, the some of the reasons we have these E. coli outbreaks with produce like romaine lettuce or whatever, is that they spray those crops with manures that are, then somehow the produce isn't handled properly and the E. coli is getting in there or whatever. So that is a problem, I would say, especially with leafy greens. But for the most part, manures shouldn't be. I mean, we've used them for centuries to grow our plants. Human waste, that's a different deal.
Right.
You don't use that. So,
Don't get any ideas about, we talked about gray water a little bit last time. Don't get any ideas about black water in plants. Nope.
No.
That is a hard no on that one.
Right.
Lynn Kunstman's back with us from Jackson County Master Gardeners answering questions about gardening. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760. You do get screened. Don't worry about it. So you want to go straight onto the air. Or you could just send an email to jx@jeffnet.org, which Teresa did, no town given, wants to know if you're going to cover starting a fall garden and any helpful tips.
Oh, yikes. Well, starting at this point, you should have had your coal crops, your fall vegetables started already. So I would say go to the nursery or I know here in the valley, I went to Bi-Mart and they had beautiful cauliflower, cabbage, Brussels sprouts, broccoli, kale, and peas. And I just bought a ton of those and put them out in my garden. And they're growing. This is the perfect weather for them. Warm days, cool nights. They're growing like gangbusters. I recommend everybody put in a fall garden. And I planted from seed lettuce, mustards, spicy mustards, or, you know, Asian greens, radishes, chives, all of those things can go in now. So there's a huge amount of vegetables that do very, very well in the fall, and some of them will overwinter. If you put in, for instance, sprouting broccoli, mm-hmm. It will go through the winter, and then in like early March, you'll start getting these lovely, it's called purple sprouting broccoli, and you'll get these lovely purple broccoli heads, and it doesn't make like a huge head at the top. It starts sprouting from all of the nodes around the plant. And so you just go out every day and you pick these lovely purple broccoli flowers. And they're the earliest, you know, vegetable that I get out of my garden. It's wonderful. And they go right through the winter, even with hard freezes.
Okay, so you're picking the flowers to promote the growth of the vegetable part?
Well, no. When we eat broccoli, we're eating the flower stuff.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That's what that is, and so because these don't make like a big central head, then any broccoli, when you cut the central head, it will make side shoots mm-hmm. of flowers because it's trying to set seed, right? That's
sure.
its goal in life,
right.
And so the purple sprouting broccoli just tends to make more of those side shoots, so you get it. It's a lovely vegetable. And there are winter kales that you can pick all season. There are lots of greens that go all through the winter. I really encourage people to get out there and put it in. This is a perfect time to go and buy those little starts and get them into the garden and have them so you have them through the winter.
Sounds great. So of the list you gave, cauliflower, cabbage, Brussels sprouts, broccoli, kale, peas, and there are others on there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Don't start from seeds at this point. Is it too late to start from seeds out?
It's too late to start. Well, no, you can, things like radishes or lettuce or mm-hmm. those kinds of things, you can probably start from seed. The fast growing, you know, the crops that are going to be done in a month or two,
mm-hmm.
Those are easy. But bigger things like the cauliflower, things that you're going to wait for the flowers to harvest, or the larger leaves, so kale, broccoli, cabbage, Brussels sprouts, those kinds of things, that you need to do them from transplants by now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, you should have started those from seed a month and a half ago.
Now, for pollination activity over the course of the fall and winter, there aren't any bees around still doing that, are there?
Oh, yes, there are.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. No, the bees, you know, the honeybees have to forage all the time.
Mm.
And so, I mean, one of the things that we recommend people do is to plant flowers that bloom year-round, if mm-hmm. possible. And, I mean, I have some sunflowers now, some wild-type sunflowers in my yard that are just opening up now. And the migrating butterflies need flower resources this time of year to make their journey south. So things like asters and goldenrod you should have in your yard, and the honeybees are going to be using those, the native bees, the bumblebees, and the other native leaf-cutting bees and furrow bees and orchard bees are all going to be using those, you know, to provision nests. They're still the
okay.
bees, some of our native bees are still out there provisioning nests. So, yeah. Keep things flowering in your yard.
Is there anything different in how you handle soil cover in a fall or winter garden? Do you still want to have mulch on top of that to keep the soil from drying out, or is that just less of an issue?
Either mulch or to keep the weeds down, or a cover crop, some kind of a cover crop for the winter. So winter rye or, you know, some kind of, local nurseries sell these, I think they're called Medic Mix or something, and you can get them, and they're winter growing plants that they grow through the winter, and then you cut them down in the spring and can use them as compost or till them directly into the soil before you plant. And what those do is inhibit weed growth and enrich the soil.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's a win-win.
Cover cropping is a really good thing to do, and people can look that up, you know, on the OSU website, there are lots of things about cover crops. So.
Okay. Final email from Daniel in Eugene wants to know if you have any suggestions for keeping squirrels and other rodents away from pumpkins.
Oh, my God. Oh, no, I do not. Other than having a blue healer that will, you know, chase and eat them. That's really a problem. Rats will do this as well, and they'll come in underneath, and the pumpkin will look like it's fine, and you pick it up, and it's hollowed out from the bottom out. They are looking for any source of food this time of year as it gets chilly, mm-hmm. and they're specifically looking for those mature seeds. Obviously, in the pumpkins and squash that we have out in our gardens now, those seeds inside are maturing, and the squirrels know they're there. You know, they recognize that there's a food source inside that thing, plus the meat itself of the fruit. And so, yeah, they are. You could put a wire screen if they're coming up from underneath. You could get hardware cloth and put it. But ground squirrels are going to come overland too. They're just going to, you know, they're going to, unless you're putting it in a mesh bag or something that they can't get through. I just don't know.
All right, so squirrels are, yeah, there's a couple different approaches, but they're pretty tough to, they get around most of them, it sounds like.
Yeah, sometimes you can set the squash itself like up on an upside down flower pot, and they won't figure out to climb up there, but try that. I don't know.
Wow. Okay. It's trying to defeat the squirrels is always one of the toughest jobs. Okay. All right. Well, next time we talk to you, it will be fall. So happy fall.
Yeah. All right.
And Lynn Kunzman joins us once a week here on the Jefferson Exchange to talk about gardening tips. She's with Jackson County Master Gardeners. Lynn, always a pleasure.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Talk to you next week.